Well, thanks to the people who keep a cool head while helping us produce the show, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance, and thanks to the vocal talents of Emma Bentley.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, where scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to our monthly look at critical thinking skeptic check this episode. How low can you go? And if you thought it was cool and you'd like to hear more Skeptic Check or other Big Picture Science episodes, you'll find them on our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
Now, if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because, well, podcasting may not make it into the 22nd century when you're eventually defrosted, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station's not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen by using iTunes, we invite you to leave a review about Big Picture Science on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, well, email them all to bigpicturescience@seti.org and throw in some faint praise if you don't mind.
Hey, you're the unfrozen guy from the 20th century, right?
Last time I checked, I'm never gonna get used to the 31st century. Caffeinated bacon, baconated grapefruit, Admiral Crunch.
Skeptic Check is brought to you thanks to a generous grant from the Trimberger Family Foundation. At the Trimberger Family Foundation, we hold that skepticism is a lamp that lights the way to truth. Trimberger.org.
This is WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to The Magic of Radio.
The program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Now, ever since the fall of communism in the Soviet Union, Russian and American UFO researchers have been sharing more and more data on the subject. As suspected, it is not just an American myth. There are plenty of documented cases for the sharing when the politics are set aside and people of all countries more closely investigate the universe in which we live. Paul Stonehill was born in Kiev, USSR, in 1959 and immigrated to the U.S. in 1972. In his youth, Paul helped smuggle people out from behind the Iron Curtain, aided dissidents, and smuggled banned literature into the USSR. He graduated from California State University with a BA in political science. Paul has worked as a journalist covering warfare, as well as freelancing on stories about UFOs and anomalous phenomena. The topics of his published writings include Soviet and Russian military research of paranormal phenomena, underwater unidentified phenomena, mysteries of the Soviet space program, mysteries of ancient history, time travel experiments in Russia, ghost trains of Eurasia, Soviet mind control programs, and UFO phenomena in Russia, Ukraine, and the Baltics. He is the author of the Soviet UFO Files, Paranormal Mysteries of Eurasia, and co-author of several books with Philip Mantel, including his recent release, Russia's USO Secrets, Unidentified Submersible Objects in Russia and International Waters. And we're privileged to have Mr. Paul Stonehill on the line with us today. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
How are you today?
Thank you. Good. Great to hear from you.
It's good to have you on. We'll get right into it here. You know a lot about Russia's UFO files, obviously. Was there ever a Roswell-type incident in Russia where there have been back-engineered crash disks?
Well, it's different than in the United States. You know, you can put a label as a Roswell, but recently I presented information about the 1978 alleged case of when a U.S. UFO was ordered to be shut down, and the technology used by Soviet missile engineers and others to help with their own research. This happened in 1978 in Central Asia. Another incident took place in 1986, a very interesting case that I've described more than once, had to do with an off-limits small town in Dalnegorsk. That's what it's called in Russian. It had another Chinese name before. And an object flew into the town and fell down, then ascended again, then finally burned away. And the fragments that were left behind were described to be as, you know, out of this earth and impossible to recreate with modern technology. However, some other people who knew said that we had had this technology since 1970s. Nobody knows for sure. The chief investigator had died, Dr. Dvuzhilny, and somebody else I should mention who was very active in the Russian, in the Soviet and Russian UFO research, Vadim Chernobrov. He passed away less than a month ago, and with him, a lot of the expeditions are now canceled. But just two incidents. However, I want to tell your audience something else, which I brought up. A very good and knowledgeable person in the Soviet space program and missile development was Dr. Budakov, a professor and author of many fascinating books. And he wasn't shy about speaking, you know, up when it was more or less safe to do so about UFO research. And I've been in touch with him years ago. He also passed away, but when he was alive, he brought up information about an object that was given to top Soviet academicians by the government, and they had to give the assessment of what this object was. The date was approximately 1954. It was after Stalin's death. They couldn't make, they couldn't understand what it is, and they studied it from all angles. Well, today, every school child knows what a microchip is and what it looks like. Not in 1954. So this is just, those are just some examples of what we know that the Soviets had in their hands.
Okay, so
and of course, there is so much more that we do not know.
What they were looking at turned out to be a microchip?
Yes. And the source is above any doubt. Valery Burdakov, I always bring him up. I wrote about him in my videos. I talk about him a lot and will continue to do so because he was, again, a most knowledgeable person and a scientist. Who, by the way, I should bring this up, was one of the people who were alarmed by the 1988-89 Soviet probe to the moonlet of Mars called Phobos, because he knew I believe, just as Mr. Buzz Aldrin does, that there is something on the moonlet that doesn't want visitors who come to take soil samples and bombard it and so forth. It was a failed mission. The Soviet spacecraft was destroyed, actually spinned out from the orbit in 1989. Mm-hmm. And when Professor Burdakov found out about the whole mission, again, he raised alarm and he published articles about it. So this is just people that I like to use as sources in my research.
Okay, there was also a an American probe that the same thing happened with. It was going to Mars, and I can't tell you the name of it or the date, but there was a probe going to Mars that just kind of vanished from sight. Are you familiar with that?
Well, no, but I'm keeping my interest focused on Russia and China.
Right.
So I will tell you that the joint Chinese-Russian probe to the same moonlet did not even leave the orbit of Earth in 2011. So it seems that, yeah, we lose a number of spacecraft mm-hmm. around Mars, but Russian leaders and those in China and the United States want to get to that moonlet despite of all the problems. Mm-hmm. Phobos, not Deimos, but Phobos. And I had a video recently about, this is very interesting, about the ancient map of Mars that is still in present-day Armenia in one of the archives. The Soviets knew, they didn't act on it, but they knew that there was an ancient map of Mars that only showed one moonlet, not two. And that map probably came from the Alexandria Library. I did as much research as I could. It was like a detective story, and it's very interesting. But it seems like the ancients knew more than our modern-day scientists.
Right.
And there was no way, you know, for them to know about the moonlets of Mars, because only in 1876 an American astronomer discovered the two moonlets.
Okay, now,
however,
the word
Jonathan Swift knew as much in the Gulliver's Travels. He describes those. So when we start this, you know, research of modern-day UFO and USO phenomena, we find connections to the ancient past, whether we want to or not.
The word moonlets, describe moonlets for us.
It's a small moon of Mars. I'm using, there are two moons that are, and most of them, most likely they're of artificial origin.
Oh, okay.
And Soviet scientists, by the way, who worked with Sagan, Carl Sagan too, like Shklovsky, they came out with this hypothesis that those moons of Mars were actually of artificial extraterrestrial origin, which was very good. One of them, Shklovsky, later recanted and, said that he wasn't right. But nevertheless, I remember that even back in the 1960s, Soviet painters used to, I have one or two paintings, images where they, showed Martian moons to be of artificial origin. So there was a lot of interesting knowledge, even in the Soviet Union, pertaining to what we can call paranormal phenomena, yeah. UFOs and USOs.
Well, there are theories, and I don't know whether to believe them or not. I don't particularly believe them, but theories that state that our moon, Earth's moon, is artificial and hollow. What do you say to that?
You know what? I don't know enough. I don't get into that. But I can tell you other things. I remember reading Russian sources, and I spoke out about it more than 20 years ago, who cite Chinese information about, for example, part of a human skeleton that was discovered on the moon. Let's remember that a lot of the information that is promulgated in Russia and China never makes it here.
Right.
And it either gets lost in translation, or the our media doesn't pay any attention to this. And, I have nothing but scorn for them for this.
Right.
Because there is a lot of interesting stuff that comes up. So Moon has its own secrets. I do want to tell you that the Russian cosmonauts, the Soviet cosmonaut program, was very much interested in the moon landings that the United States had conducted, and they claimed that they watched them step by step. There was a special facility in Moscow where they observed moon landings, and they have no doubts that it happened. So that's, very interesting information.
What happened,
also,
Paul?
Also, I want to bring your attention to the Russian space program and the incidents that they have with UFOs, USOs. Many cosmonauts came out to speak in favor of the presence of the aliens in our solar system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah, there have been several astronauts and cosmonauts. I can cite several astronauts, American astronauts. Can you cite a particular cosmonauts that have said as much?
Igor Volk, for example. He died, unfortunately, not long ago. But the main one is Pavel Popovich. And before we go on, I want to let your audience know, I will touch up on as much stuff as I can. But to get to the people, let's say, around the world, I'm using my YouTube channel, and it says Paul Stonehill Paranormal Research is the title. And not long ago, I added one about the Soviet space and Russian space program and UFOs and USOs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Pavel Popovich, who was also from Ukraine like myself, was a very active person and in the Soviet space program, one of the first legendary cosmonauts. And unlike anybody in the United States or Chinese programs, he was very much in favor of helping UFO researchers when it wasn't in fashion to do so in the Soviet Union.
Right.
He helped them. He also came out with information about UFO sightings. He helped promote one semi-official UFO research organization from 1984 on. He had his own sighting when he was flying to the United States with a group of Soviet scientists. They had a meeting in Pittsburgh. The sighting took over Cuba. It was a very unusual triangular object. So here was somebody who wasn't shy to speak about UFOs.
Right.
A number of them, even those who do not believe in UFOs presence or alien presence now on Earth, spoke about their knowledge about past visits to our planet. And they spoke in such detail, like Leonov, for example. He was very much in it. And I mentioned others who are still alive. Not many of the original ones, but still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So they, like Musa Mansarov, who is a more recent Russian cosmonaut, for example, they describe what they had seen.
Mm-hmm.
And in my videos, I also go into the paranormal aspect of the Soviet-Russian space programs and the effects of outer space on cosmonauts, which cannot be explained in our modern scientific knowledge. We don't know what it is. And one of them described, for example, an impact on their spaceship. It's like a meteorite struck it, but there was not even a dent or psychological ones. And the effect on their minds being in space. And there is one case well known when the cosmonauts are being chased away, so to say, from their missions. It's called the Whisper in Space. So, yeah, I go quite a lot into this. Very interesting stuff.
So, yeah, a lot of alien contactees, experiencers, abductees, whatever you want to call them, they say that the E.T. talks to them not in their particular language, be it English or Russian or Chinese or Spanish, but they speak to them telepathically. Now, is that what you're saying is going on with these cosmonauts and astronauts?
At least some of them.
Yeah, they're hearing these instructions or whatever it is that ET has to say telepathically, not necessarily in their own language, but in a way that they understand mentally. Correct?
Absolutely, but more than that. It's just that they don't, you know, it's one thing to say that they speak to you or try to, they present, these entities present information that is very private. Every human being has private information deep inside him or her. Or her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they speak to the cosmonauts, you know, they present such information, so it's not fake. Very interesting stuff. And I want to tell you too that I describe in my books and lectures how the cosmonauts actually observed very unusual sights when looking down on Earth in space, and some of them also heard voices that were not speaking to them, but they should not be hearing, like barking of dogs when you are in orbit, a few other things. So you know, it's not only UFOs and USOs, but also just a new phenomena that we don't know anything about that's coming into our psyche.
But to be fair, can't that type of thing be pinned to just being in outer space? I mean, you're out there so many days, so many weeks. You're out on the space station for so long, and isn't it? Couldn't it be attributed to just a psychological thing and not an actual communication?
Most likely, but it happened to more than one person.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and then I am very much mesmerized by the information from one of the cosmonauts about the effect that the cosmonauts feel when in outer space, mm-hmm. some of them. They're changing into another being, and I go into details in my videos because it's unusual, and
yeah.
I'm sure we'll get to know more and more as we get into outer space.
Oh yeah.
But David, before we get into outer space, we need to know more about our planet, and you know, like the oceans. This is one of the reasons I've been researching USOs for many years, and I want to. Get more. USOs, the unidentified submersible objects, we should look under our feet, so to say, when we get into the oceans, because there is a lot. I can give you some examples of locations, and people can, you know, follow up on my research if they want to. Lake Baikal in Siberia, Lake Issyk-Kul in Central Asia, Mariana Trench.
Oh, yeah.
The United States territory. That's incredible. I'm so happy I was able to put together a research about it, and because there is a lot going on, and I know Guam, the U.S. island, that it has its own secret, so to say, U.S. territory, and I know somebody who did study of the UFOs there, young men, sightings that go back for years. I am interested in the Mariana Trench, and because of that, I found out about close cooperation about the Soviet and American scientists. Forget the Cold War. Cold War existed for people like me or you and others. I'm talking about those at the top. They cooperated closely.
Oh,
there
yeah.
was missions to Mariana Trench.
Mm-hmm.
And during those missions, some very interesting equipment was lost when they tried to put it down into the Mariana Trench to study. Somebody sheared off. You know, NASA-built cables.
Wow.
And I have a video presentation about it, too. And I keep updating my also Facebook page and because there is a lot of... And I send it to all over the world. There is a lot that's going on. Do you know that China already had, this year alone, had 3 missions to Mariana Trench? And Japan is always out there, too. And... trust me, everybody, you know, the major powers are very much interested in such location. And it's just one of them. There is the Devil's Triangle not far away from Japan. Very unusual spot. To me, because of the Russian connection, I keep asking people to follow up on the Kuril Islands research. Not long ago, I presented information about the island of Matua, which was captured by the Soviets from the Japanese in 1945. That was after Germany was crushed, and still Nazi submarines kept coming to the Japanese island. It's an island full of secrets, and it was abandoned in terms of close watch by the Soviets, by the Russians, from about 2001 till now. Okay. No more. The Russian army is there. The island is off limits. There is a scientific expedition together with the military and divers and so on, because something is going on that island. 200 scientists are scouring the island, and the Japanese left a lot of stuff there, but they destroyed even more. It's a state secret. And Japanese, I'm sure, you know, spies had been in that area as well after 1945. And it's an active volcano island. There is something in the bowels of that island. Some say 54 stories of, you know, a secret facility going down 54 stories. Now, the Russians, the admiral in charge of the expedition of Akhansk, he spoke out and he said that, you know, we got to study all the closed-off tunnels. That island is a wonder of Japanese engineering, they left a lot of things sealed up. We don't know what's inside the island, what they're hiding, but the Russians will find out. It's their territory. They're not giving it up. Next to it is not far away, is an island called Rashua. It's a small volcanic island. Well, I know that the Russian military, a few people who were diving in the area, and they found ruins of an ancient city down below. Well, somebody's going to study it sooner or later. Mm-hmm. But if you go into other Kuril Islands, there is so much more, and hopefully some information will come out.
Yeah. I need to take one moment here just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM on your radio dial. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with UFO researcher, Mr. Paul Stonehill. Now, getting back to what you were talking about, the Mariana Trench. The Mariana Trench has always been fascinating, for me at least. It's, 7 miles deep? Is that it?
Yeah, if I recall, 11,000 feet, something like that. I'm not going to... I present all this information in my research. But I do want to let you know something. Again, something that wasn't known in the United States. It was the Swiss-built Batiscaf submersible vessel that went down in 1963 with two people aboard. Swiss scientists and a U.S. Navy officer. This was the first time somebody went so deep. Apparently, they observed a UFO, and it was a classified information in the United States, but not to the Soviet spies. So information came out, and in Russia they knew. And they also mentioned some other missions of the same craft that took place, or another one of the same family that took place in 1968. In the area, in the Caribbean Ocean. And I go into all the details because I found some interesting information about missions that were disclosed by the U.S. Navy and not. And it's all, you know, you can find it if you look for it. But apparently, in Mariana Trench, they saw something very unusual. And from the research of the biological entities found in the trench, some are very unusual. And please understand that whatever lives down there doesn't depend on our sun.
No.
It depends on the geochemical processes down below. It's another form of life.
Well, yeah.
And also, not long ago, there was a lot of news about very unusual sound that keeps coming from the Mariana Trench. But I think a year or two ago, and I mentioned it too, that cannot really be classified. It's not a whale that could be down below at that depth. So It's just some of the information.
As it turns out, I have that sound bite right here that has come from the Mariana Trench. I'd like to play it for our listeners, okay? Hold on a second. This is the sound. I got this off the web. You tell me if this is the sound that you're referring to. Is that the one you're talking about?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. They try to classify it as whales, and I leave it up to the scientists and their conscience to, but there is much more. I know that there were interesting sightings in Guam, and one of them, I think, goes back to 1947, too. Yeah, but there is very little information that can be obtained because this was a very militarized island, and you know the U.S. Navy had presence there.
Okay.
However, what's interesting to me is that in 1981 they closed down the U.S. submarine base on Guam.
Hmm.
You know, the Soviet submarines were always lurking around that area, so I don't see why it would be closed down. But that's something else. I don't want to get into it. I do want to bring up something very interesting so your listeners can follow up, too. The 1982 so-called swimmers research I've had. In 1982, the Soviet military tried to capture very unusual humanoid beings in the Lake Baikal. And it was a failure. They lost some of the Soviet divers and frogmen, but similar beings had been sighted elsewhere. They don't use breathing apparatuses to operate, at the bottom of the lakes.
Mm.
They do what they need to do, and the size is about 9 feet. So through the years, I did research. I found out confirmation of the case from a very reputable people. I also found out that in 1932, there was a similar similar encounter in the White Sea in Russia, very interesting area up north. And the Russian intelligence service also cited another similar being in the Far East in 2000. Most important documentary in back to 1982, through the documents of the SETCA program, and I'll get into it in a few minutes, there was a sighting in the very interesting area around Voronezh. It's a secret facility area called Borisoglebsk in Russia, in the Soviet Union, where they were training Top Gun pilots. And they had an issue with the UFOs interfering with the flights of the Soviet aircraft. Some of them came down, were destroyed, and there was much more. The documents of the SETCA program are, it's like if the Pentagon, released documents, or not even released. The documents became available when the Soviet Union fell apart.
Tell me something, them. Paul, what came down and were destroyed?
A few Soviet aircrafts were destroyed. Yeah, and when this happened, there was, in the 1982 case, those who had observed this incident reported a 9-foot-tall alien being very similar to the ones sighted in 1982.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, there were, I think, 9-foot-tall alien beings here in the United States, too. Indian something, nuclear site on the East Coast. And when we had a power outage on the East Coast, and they reported a UFO over the nuclear energy site, and they reported a 9-foot being inside the facility repairing something, because I guess, according to the story anyway, allegedly, the aliens knew that something was amiss with our nuclear power plant, and was threatening to melt down.
So, you see, well, in 1986, in Kyiv, the city of my birth in Ukraine, you know, there were also reports, you know, coming from Chernobyl,
mm-hmm.
About, you know, when the Chernobyl tragedy took place,
mm-hmm.
A UFO was sighted right there, and apparently, due to its impact, it diminished the effects of the nuclear explosion. It actually did, and in my books, I present names of the people who had seen it, scientists, technicians who reported it, and the UFOs kept coming back to the Chernobyl area through the 1990s. And this is not one example of so-called aliens, or call them whatever you want, that actually try to mitigate the impact we have on ecology.
Yeah.
We have another case, and I want people to, Lake Sarez in Central Asia, which if the dam breaks that holds the waters together, all the countries down below will suffer, Afghanistan and a few others. Well, apparently the Soviet engineers and military operational staff who spied on SDI program, they were stationed not too far away from Lake Sarez, and because of their advanced equipment, they could see what's going on around, and they saw numerous comings and goings of disc-shaped objects inside into the lake and out. So it's like they're trying to prop up this area, trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Also in the Ural Mountains, which is a wonderful paranormal area for the, you know, in Russia, they have sightings of the UFOs more than once, and in the areas where the Soviets had very bad impact on ecology.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, I think it's obvious that the modern, as we call it, the modern UFO era got started shortly after we started toying with atomic weapons and testing atomic weapons. And I think E.T. is very interested in, you know, the kids have found the matches and we have to protect them against from themselves. And I just wonder how far they're going to go in doing so. Do they have to just come right out and say, look, we're here, knock it off, you know? Or are they doing that?
I don't know if there was, I kind of suspect that there had to be a high-level introduction to the main governments on our planet,
mm-hmm.
Whether we wanted to or not, of the capabilities. And, you know, in my lectures and books, I mentioned the, you know, the wonderful year of 1947 when Stalin had information that the Soviet spies brought from the United States and elsewhere, and he laid it down in front of the father of the Soviet space program, Korolev, who at that time was not as, you know, there was no space program, but he was a scientist recently released from the concentration camps where Stalin put him. Anyway, Stalin introduced him to the pile of documents, ordered him to stay in the Kremlin for the next few days with interpreter, translators and so forth, and wanted to find out his assessments of the UFO danger to the Soviet Union. And apparently, you know, he was told by Korolev and other scientists that, yes, UFOs exist, but no, they don't present an imminent danger to the Soviet power. And there were other interesting incidents. You know, I also go, I have a video, two videos about the Russian or Soviet Antarctica expeditions. What's interesting is that, so that you know, in 1946, the Soviets came to Antarctica, but in the whaling ships, under the guise of the whaling expedition. And in 1947, they and the Americans were quite in touch, based on the knowledge we have, about the whole Antarctica thing. And what's interesting is that in the eastern Antarctica, I always call people's attention to that part of Antarctica. Some of the territory was actually ceded to the Soviet Union by the United States, the Bunger Hills area, so to say. And we don't know what's going on. I don't believe in any Nazi presence in Antarctica. The Nazis were destroyed.
No. Yeah.
But the Russians and the Americans had been there. And now we have India and China and Australia, which is very active in that area. Everybody is going to Antarctica because something is going on in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what could be, I know exploration of areas that we have not explored before, that's important. I get that. But what's the big draw to that chunk of ice, you know?
That's not something you and I will not know, but what I present in my lectures and books is the information from the Soviet naval officers, Navy officers and others, who had been in the waters around Antarctica, and the photographs they took of the UFOs and objects coming in and out from the ocean and the water, and some of the territories all around, especially one British island, very interesting, and others. And I also found out not that long ago, again, Russian information about the 1997 case when Australian Navy working, I believe it was in the Bellingshausen area in the western Antarctica, and the strange facilities they sighted down below in on the bottom of the ocean floor. And, of course, it wasn't made known in the West, but in Russia they did. And 1997, to me, is a very interesting year because we had the Arizona Phoenix sightings.
Right, right.
Lights, unusual lights, and a few other interesting developments around the world. And, that's what comes when the information comes out. I always want to see parallels with other parts of the world. And you see dates, like 1966, I was doing investigation of the horrible earthquake in Central Asia, in Uzbekistan, in 1966. And, there were certain dates in late April, so I wanted to see what's going on in the United States. Do you know that during the same time, we had a massive UFO observation on the eastern seaboard? And a Florida governor flying in a craft, in an airplane, was chased by a UFO and came out. This was in the media.
Yeah.
And our future president at that time, Gerald Ford, was so much, he had so many letters from his constituents that he demanded hearings in the United States Congress about UFO presence in the United States. 1966, you have UFOs in Central Asia, you have them in the United States and in Australia too. And from what I understand, but don't have complete confirmation, is in Indonesia as well.
Yeah. And Ronald Reagan, as governor, his plane was paced by a UFO. And he also, while on land, he and his wife, Nancy, saw a UFO. So... So he was very interested in UFOs as well, you know?
I think Gorbachev saw one.
Gorbachev, yeah.
On the ground.
Yeah.
And I present information at the so-called Manchegorsk object.
Mm-hmm.
It's still one of the most mysterious cases in the Soviet UFO research. Again, confirmed through the Setka investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Very mysterious 1987 case.
Yeah.
And when they captured or took a hold of a very unusual shuttle-like object. The Soviets did. They studied it, and then it disappeared or blew up. There are different versions, but when they were able to get inside, they could see that it was made for a very small humanoid people, and they couldn't deal with the equipment inside. And there was the research, and apparently Gorbachev changed his itinerary when he was in the Kola Peninsula and came to see this object, and we don't know enough. What I do want to say is that I'm very grateful to Gorbachev for all his policies and the changes made, because
yes.
No matter what's going on today, it's not the same nation anymore, and many countries became free all around.
Yeah.
And he knew much more. As you know, he and Reagan exchanged a few comments about UFOs, and maybe Reagan was more outspoken.
Yeah. I was going to say all of this recent talk about Russia and the U.S. and all their Russia's our enemy and all of this, and we're sharing information with them, and this has to stop, yada, yada, yada. It's all politics. Behind the curtain, there is a lot of cooperation between Russia and the United States, not just on the UFO subject, but on other subjects. But when it comes to UFOs, we have a hotline to each other. correct me if I'm mistaken, but you should know. We have a hotline to each other on the UFO subject because there was almost a war started. The World War III started way back when. Can't remember the date. When UFOs started coming toward America from the direction of Russia, and we were ready to press that button when we found out, when they turned around and went back, and come to find out, both the United States and Russia knew nothing about what these objects were. Am I correct?
I've heard something about it.
Yeah?
But the case that almost started the war was in 1982, and it was recorded in the Sietka program, mm-hmm. over Ukraine, when a Soviet nuclear silo with missiles, Moscow lost control because there was a gigantic object in the sky, mm-hmm. over the silo, and the sequence began for the missiles to be launched,
yeah.
At the United States. And I know that the commanders on site, some of them became gray-haired. Their hair turned white. Because they knew what was going on, but later the control was assumed. Moscow couldn't, was not in control of anything, but it came back. I'm sure the United States was aware about it back in 1982 as well. They had to be.
Yeah.
And you're asking me about, I'm just trying to be logical. I don't know the details. I couldn't, but I am sure that China and now India have to be on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
China, for sure. And as I speak, I am, telling your audience and everybody else, keep an eye on China. They have had a tremendous UFO research unparalleled to ours or the Russian,
mm-hmm.
because the government is sponsoring groups that study UFOs and funding them. It's not a shame to talk about UFOs in those countries.
Right.
And many scientists are involved. And look at China's strides in the outer space development. And they're going to do it on their own, most likely.
Mm.
And they've had a tremendous history of UFOs going back to the ancient times, from the Yellow Emperor on. And it's a country that doesn't share too much information. However, I am sure that they are in touch with the U.S. government as well about any UFO danger.
Don't worry. We keep in touch with other countries when it comes to UFOs, believe me, because it is a worldwide phenomenon. And I need to take one more minute to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And today we are speaking with UFO researcher and author, Mr. Paul Stonehill. Paul, tell our listeners about your latest book. We're running kind of short on time now, but tell us about Russia's USO secrets, the book.
The book contains information about sightings by the Soviet and Russian navies of UFO and USO objects. Throughout the oceans and spy missions that they had, and they encountered UFOs and USOs where they shouldn't be encountering them, but they thought the Americans may be spying on them,
right.
Especially some of the most interesting phenomena, like the quackery, and I go into that in the book, and observations even in the Bermuda Triangle, the Devil's Triangle around the world also. Information about the so-called underwater alien bases that came out, the knowledge came from such prominent people as late cosmonaut Popovich,
mm-hmm.
Encounters during the war and very unusual recordings of the, like in 1951, when an object was approaching the Soviet Union and they couldn't stop it underwater.
Hmm.
A few more. This is a very interesting subject because, you know, we know about observations from other navies, but not many people knew about Soviet observations.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that most of the sightings take place in the North Atlantic area, Pacific Ocean, not so many in the Indian Ocean. However, I present information about the Indian Ocean that this is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, I just wanted to repeat, if because there's so much that I like to be engaged in, but and I put up my latest research in my YouTube channels. So if you ever want to see what's going on, it's Paul Stonehill Paranormal Research. And I try to go more, I try to bring in, for example, Russian information about Brazil in the 1940s and the unusual things that took place there, because
mm-hmm.
Russians have their own wealth of information, which is not available in the United States. And you know, you can see quite a lot about what's going on, because they have their own interests and missions all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia itself, it's the largest country in the world, and much of it is not explored in the book. Like, you know, for example, I go into the Arctic areas, tremendously important, because we are very close to either confrontation in the Arctic Ocean or most likely cooperation, which is being disguised as confrontational stance.
Yeah.
Russia is putting a lot of money into the redevelopment of the Arctic. But I want to bring up something to your attention,
mm-hmm.
and I go into details in the book, but in the 1970s, they had a special plan to militarize the Arctic. And what they did is they built bases, and they mothballed them, okay? Stalin was very much interested in the Arctic areas, and he had a tremendously important program of preparing the Arctic for the future needs. And of all, even Nazi Germany was very much involved in the Arctic when they were friends with the Soviet Union before World War II.
Mm-hmm.
German ships were allowed to sail in the northern route, so to say, in the Arctic route, and the Russians actually lost control over some of the Nazi ships in the area. And we know today that there are interesting secret bases that they left in that area. So there is something that's going on in the Arctic. But to give you specific examples, Yakutia is a republic within the Russian Federation. And there have been tremendous sightings in 1979, sightings that the government agencies reported unusual. And in other periods, but there was a wave in 1979, something was going on in that area. It's very hard to reach. It's a strategic place within Russia. But not too far away from there, in the next region, right next to them, there is an area where they found a tremendous amount of the industrial diamonds, which are important for the development of our planet. It was a state secret in the Soviet Union.
Hmm.
And today, it's not easy to get to. Well, the UFOs have been observed in that area for ages, as long as we have recordings, because, you know,
well, that's a, make a
not
good,
too many people there. And
yeah, good to place
me,
to hide.
As I've been studying the local folklore and tales and so forth, I was always amazed that the Yakut people had ancient tales and recordings of the metal fish that lurks in the waters of the Arctic Ocean.
The metal fish?
It goes back hundreds of years.
The metal fish, you say?
Metal fish, gigantic metal fish.
Huh.
And, you know, they were not primitive people. They knew what they were saying, you know. And but again, you know, if we go to, for example, Issyk-Kul Lake in Central Asia, UFOs and USO have been observed there for ages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another lake where, you know, strange things have been sighted.
Yeah, metal fish.
You know, to me, this is very interesting. I know that territory because I've studied for so many years. Even back in the Soviet Union, you know, some things we could find out.
Mm-hmm.
UFOs was not an object that a subject that you could speak about it too openly, nor did people know a lot. Nevertheless, some information came out, and there were some publications that would print a little bit more than others.
Mm-hmm.
So those who wanted to know could read about it.
Yeah, this mention of metal fish reminds me of the biblical story of Jonah and the whale being swallowed by perhaps a metal fish, huh? Because I don't think Jonah could have survived being swallowed by a whale living in its stomach and yada yada, and angels coming to it, or beings, humanoid beings coming to Jonah and talking to Jonah and then releasing Jonah. So maybe that whale is what they identified as a whale was one of these metal fish / USOs. What do you think?
I think I'm positive because I have, documents or tales that go back for centuries, not the thousands of years. That would be China and the Yellow Emperor. But in the country where I am come from, like Ukraine, for example, in my books I always mention a very interesting case that took place over 1,000 years ago in Kiev, when the fishermen down below, first of all, people observed a very unusual star that hovered over the city.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day or so, the fishermen found something very unusual being in the waters of the river, and they threw it back in disgust. And the description is very similar to some of the aliens that are being described today.
Oh,
also, in the videos and in the books, I show Russian art and Georgian from Republic of Georgia and Ukrainian depicting spaceship-like, UFO-like objects in the religious art,
right,
and tales and legends of such unusual beings throughout Russian history.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, you know, one thing is to talk about legends. I also have a case when a Dutch spy diplomat was in St. Petersburg, 1716, and he wrote a report, which is still a part of the official Russian state documents. He wrote a report to his country about the unusual aerial battle over St. Petersburg. What's interesting is that later I found confirmation of the well-known Russian admiral, Sinyavin, who observed the same aerial battle in 1716 over St. Petersburg. When you watch Star Wars and you see battles in the sky, this is what it reminded you of, the description.
Right.
You know, this
India,
was 18th century.
India, too, has had their battles in the sky of these Vimanas, they call them, or, you know, same type
Vimanas.
Of thing. Vimanas.
Yeah, and India had also battles, description of battles in the ocean, in the waters of the ocean,
right,
between the humans and demonic, that's what they call them, but, you know, advanced strange beings. And
mm-hmm.
that's why we found connection, Philip Mantle and myself, in that book, Russia's USO Secrets. We found a connection, state connection to ancient India from the Lake Baikal. And this is, when you start research, you do find parallels to other countries.
Yeah. Well, I always say there's connection. Everything is connected to everything else. And if you look hard enough, you will find those connections, you know. And I think there's a lot of things in ufology, or a lot of things in our ancient history, and even biblical biblical teachings, whether it's Bible or whatever other religious myths that we're talking about, there are connections to the UFO phenomenon. And we're running short on time, but where can our listeners go to find out more about your work?
Thank you. My YouTube channel, which, you know, gets updated quite recently,
mm-hmm.
it's called Paul Stonehill Paranormal Research. That's what you need. You just put it in, you know, and the YouTube search, and it'll bring you. And I talk about USOs, the space program, also such interesting phenomena as the so-called golden woman or ghost trains of Eurasia, or, you know, information from Antarctica updated and Arctic Ocean, because all this is very interesting. And I'm in constant touch with the researchers in Russia, Ukraine, and elsewhere, so we exchange information.
Very good, very good. Mr. Paul Stonehill, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope we can get together and share some more of your research on another show.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can reach me by emailing me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. Now, this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, and then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to whfr.fm, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Yo, guys and dolls. You were at the malt shop with Daddy G here in WHFR. And let's see, we're going back to the 50s and 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice in the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.